Shalom, this is Rabbi Eli Rothberger from Young Israel Pesach Clifton. We are continuing our Daf HaShavua Insights of the Daf series. Today, Bez Hashem, we get to finish up the first parak of Pesach HaSukkah, Big Yashar Koach to all the people of the Chabura. This first parak is not an easy parak, and there are a lot of difficult inyanim, a lot of technical topics, Tumah and Tahara and building, and Baruch Hashem, Shir is continuing to go strong, even getting stronger, and we look forward to continuing on in Pesach HaSukkah. With the second parak, finishing up the halachos of Sukkah, then moving on, Bezer Hashem, to the third parak where we discuss the Arba Minim and getting on with the rest of the Masechta. Our topic today is not one that has to do with the actual daf itself, per se. It's actually a tangent. It's a little bit of a side point, but it's one that we can learn from a lot and bears a lot of thought. And I'll give you the basic introduction. The Gemara was discussing over the past daf or so, the permissibility of using a mat for schach. And one of the questions is, does a mat, certain mats that are allowed, are not mekabel tumah, and mats that are not allowed are mekabel tumah? What the Gemara did not do was discuss to what extent they are mekabel tumah. And the Gemara brings down a Mishnah. The Gemara brought down a case called Choltzos. We wanted to know what exactly are chotzos, and that Rish Lakish said it was a machatzeles, it's a mat, and we bring another area where Rish Lakish concord with that opinion, and he said it was machatzeles or mats also. Interesting, though, is what Rish Lakish does, when instead of just quoting his opinion from another place, he has a statement where he says, Hareini kaparos b'chil banav. Any yisurim or any difficulties that come to me in my lifetime should serve as an atonement for Rabbi Yechiya, the great Tana, and his children. And why is this? Shebitchilash kishenishtak haTorah miYisrael, that originally when the Torah was almost forgotten, Allah Ezra miBavel, the Yista, Ezra came up from Bavel and he reestablished it. When Ezra came up, he was dealing with tremendous problems of assimilation to the point where he gathered a whole number of Jews. And Sefer says, on Sukkot, and he showed them a little of an Esrog, and they had no idea what it was. Unfortunately, it's not as outrageous as we think. Probably many Jews today that also don't know the difference between an Esrog and a lemon, unfortunately. And they haven't had the privilege of learning the Sech Sukkah, but unfortunately, I think it's a little bit beyond that. But anyways, what Ezra was able to do, he was able to go all over the country of Eretz Yisrael and teach and restore literacy in Torah Shebichsav to the point where Jews knew, B'nai Yisrael knew exactly what to do with certain halachos and such like that. However, that lasted for a while. But what happened is, Chazur v'nishtakha, it later became forgotten. So all the Hillel HaBavli, the Yista, Hillel HaBavli came up from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, and he reestablished it. The Aruch HaNer says what happened was at that time, there were a lot of machlokas that were developing. Mishnah Chagiga, in the second parak, lists what we are told is the very first machlokas in Shas. The very first machlokas chronologically. See, the very first machlokas you find in Shas is the first Mishnah where it talks about how late can one say Kriya Shema till. But the first chronological machlokas, the first machlokas in our history, was whether we can do smicha on a korban on Yontif as well. And that Mishnah is so fascinating in the sense that it brings down generations and generations of zugos, of pairs who one was a Nasi, one was the Abbas, and one said you do smicha, one says you don't do smicha. And Hillel was concerned that what's going to happen is that we're going to end up with two different Torahs. And again, if you think about it for a second, the idea is not so crazy to us today. So you have Ashkenazim, Sephardim, Hasidim, Taimonim, and so on and so on. We also have many, many divergent minhagim. But however, though, all will agree that we still have a basic semblance of what Torah mitzvahs are, even though there are divergent minhagim that come out. Well, during Hillel's time, Hillel experienced a bas kol, who told us that the halacha follows Hillel when he's arguing with Shammai, generally most of the time. And that set us with a path of ritual observance, as opposed to just, you know, I'll do Hillel, you do Shammai, and so on. No, Hillel and Shammai, they both were valued opinions. The Gemara, the Mishnah Edios tells us why we have to learn all the opinions of Shammai, and how they do have a value of all opinions that we don't follow. But during Hillel's time, we established a certain order in terms of following Psak Halacha. That's what happened in Hillel's time, and that was good. But following that, there was a Churban Bayis, and there were the Hadrianic decrees, and there was tremendous persecution, and Torah was outlawed. And the Mishnah Rosh Hashanah says the Sanhedrin moved from 10 different places. And I can tell you, that did not help Torah scholarship. That's for sure it didn't help. So what happens is, the Mishnah says, Rabbi Chiya and his children came and they reestablished the Torah. What our Mishnah doesn't do, what our Gemara doesn't do, is explain what exactly did Rabbi Chiya do. And to this, we turn to a different Gemara, one in Bava Metzia, Daf Pei Hei Amar Beis. A parallel sugya is found also in Ksuvas, Daf Kuf Gimel Amar Beis. And we have the following situation, again involving Reish Lakish. As you see, Reish Lakish had a certain connection with Rabbi Chiya. The Gemara, and I'm going to be reading and translating the Gemara from Bava Metzia. It's a long piece. It covers around a quarter of an amud. Bear with me as I read it and translate, as will give us insight into what Rabbi Chiya did. And following that, we're going to get into a little understanding, a little bit more, as to what Rabbi Chiya did and his intentions were. The Gemara says, Reish Lakish havi mitzayin ma'ar to the Rabbah. Reish Lakish would mark the different caves in which the Chachamim were buried. One can say maybe perhaps because so people can go to their kever to daven, know where they are. Other pshat Rashi says is that so people would know where they were buried, so people won't become tummy. And then what happens? Kimat l'ma'ar to the Rabbi Chiya. When Rabbi Chiya, he came to Rabbi Chiya's cave where he was buried, his grave was hidden to him. He didn't know where to go. He didn't know where to find it. So Chalash Daite. Reish Lakish was upset with himself. So Amar, he said, Ribono Sholom, Lo Pilpalti Torah Kamohu. Didn't I expand? Literally, pilpel means a pepper. It's something sharp. Didn't I add to the Torah scholarship with my insights like Rabbi Chiya did? So Yotza Basko Vyomerlo, Basko came out and said, Torah Kamosu Pilpalta. You might have had, in terms of the quality of your Torah, yes, you might have definitely been very sharp and taught a lot and had a lot of ideas. However, Torah Kamo Lo Rivatzta did not disseminate Torah like Rabbi Chiya did. And where do we see this? Ki Havu Menatzi, Rabbi Chanina, Rabbi Chiya were having an argument, and they were discussing the different role as to what's the best way to be Marbitz Torah in terms of which way is, which derech is more valuable. And what happens is, remember Rabbi Chanina, the Rabbi Chiya, you're disagreeing with my derech. Chas v'shalom, God forbid, imishtak the Torah mi Yisrael, if the Torah will be ever forgotten, ma'adrin olam mi pilpulai. My pilpula, my sharpness, and my insights will cause the Torah to be remembered again. People will learn what I said, and they'll be able to take from what I did and to reconstruct all the different parts of Torah that were lost, and you'll be able to understand it through my brilliant thoughts, my brilliant insights. So I'm like, Bechil or Bechanina, Bahadei Hadadei, Kominitzt, you're fighting with me? The Avdi La Torah Dol Tishtachach Mi Yisrael. I was the one who caused Torah not to be forgotten. Maya Vidna, what did he do? Azilna Vesharina Kitna, I went and I planted flax, Vegadilna Nishri, I had them grow, I spun them into nets, Vitzayid Yadna Tzavi, I hunted deer, Machilna Besarahi Liyasmi, I fed their meat to Yisomim, va'arichna megilta, and then I took their skin and made it into cloth. The kasam nechamisha chumshi. I wrote 5 chumashim, 1 cloth of bereshis, 1 with shmos, and so on. The final one being devarim. V'saliknu lamasa, went to a place umakir nechamisha yunuki, bechamisha chumshi. What did I do? I taught 5 people, each one. One of the chumashim, meaning I taught 5 boys Bereishis, I taught 5 boys Shmos, 5 boys Vayikra, 5 boys Bamidbar, 5 boys Devarim. And then what happened is, I had those 5 boys who were the masters of Bereishis. What they did, they taught the people of Shmos, Bamidbar, Shmos, Vayikra, Bamidbar, Devarim. And then the Shmos people taught that group. And what happened was, there was an exponential increase in the amount of Torah that was learned. And that's what the story is going to continue on. Umas nisa shisa yinuki shisha sidri. I found 6 children and I taught them each one a seder of Mishnayos. Vermina luhu ad adrina ve'ina ikra hadadi v'asanu hadadi v'adil lay the Torah shal yikach of Yisrael. And that's what happened. The master of Zrayim taught the other 5 seder Zrayim. The master of Moed taught the other 5 seder Moed. And this kept going on fivefold. And what happened was, eventually, you had all these people becoming masters of different Sfarim, and then they went out and helped to disseminate the Torah. And this is Rabbi Chiya's idea. And this is what it says, as the Gemara concludes this little story. And it says, Hainu da Amar Rebbe, Kama Gadol Ma'aseh Chiya. This is what Rabbi said, that Rabbi Chiya's actions were really great. But one question that many of the Mefarshim ask is, I understand that Rabbi Chiya taught a tremendous amount of Torah, and it was wonderful what he did, and his system was great, to the point where, when I was in Israeli graduate school, when my Rebbein, Rabbi Chaim Foreman, Zichron Levracha, said that he has an idea, it's called Jigsaw, and he used this in his classes, and he said it's something which can be used, and I know there are Rebbein that do use this in classes. So, I've actually tried it a couple times myself, not as successful in elementary school as it would be, let's say, with a middle school, but it is something that can definitely work. But the question is, why did Rabbi Chiya have to go to the point of planting the flax, spinning the nets himself, hunting the deer, trapping the deer, shechting, making the cloth? Why didn't he just simply get a sofer to buy stuff and do it? Would have saved a lot of steps, and he could have learned and taught a lot more Torah. So Lev Vilna Gaon, as quoted by Rav Aaron Cutler, says a very basic idea, and that is, when a person is teaching Torah, the foundations of the Torah that you have are just as important as the Torah that you teach. We know that when we build a building, if the foundation is strong, the building will be strong. If the foundation is weak, or there's a chip in the foundation, it's not going to work. And what Rav Aaron Cutler, based on the Gra, is saying, is that Rabbi Chiya wanted to make sure that every single step in the process was done, Kedusha v'tahara, complete holiness. And we want to make sure that every single step of the way, there was purity, and there was complete, complete devotion to Torah. You think about this as a wonderful idea, but how does this relate to us? Could we necessarily guarantee that everything that we do or that every Rebbe who teaches has everything that is complete, complete purity? I know personally I print up worksheets, I print up booklets, we buy Sfarim. The paper that I get comes from Staples. Do I know that the person who made this paper had the same kavanas that it should be complete? What exactly does it mean, complete purity? Did Rabbi Chiya have certain Kabbalistic thoughts when he was doing this? So the truth is, I like to suggest an answer based on another idea that I saw by Rav Dessler, which says that it's not necessarily the case. And to do this, we have to go back to the beginning of the Torah. In the beginning of the Torah, we learn about one of the first tzaddikim, an enigmatic man. The man's name was Chanoch. And if you look in the beginning of Bereishis, you know that people lived an exceedingly long amount of time. People lived routinely 800, 900 plus years. And during that time, Chanoch lived till he was only 365. And the Pasuk tells us, Chanoch was taken by Hashem, and with Hashem, Kienenu kilakach oso elokim. He died an early death, and he was taken by Hashem. The question is, why did he die so early? So Rashi tells us he was a very, very big tzaddik, and Hashem was afraid that while he was a big tzaddik, he was afraid that he was going to be influenced by the people of generation. And you know, this was the time he lived at the time. He was the father of Methuselah, who was the grandfather of Noah. So you saw how already society was already going down during his time. And Hashem was worried that a tzaddik like Chanoch was going to be influenced poorly, so Hashem had him die earlier so he can die a tzaddik and not die a rush. Fine, Zehu Rashi. That's Pshat Rashi. But the question is, what exactly did Chanoch do? So I saw that Rav Dessler brought down Chazal, which tells us that no, that Chanoch was none other than a regular shoemaker. And what he did was, with every single strike of the hammer, he had tremendous kavanos, and was thinking about Shem Shemayim while he was doing it, and that's what made him such a great tzaddik. So Rav Dessler asked, what exactly are we talking about? But he was having Kabbalistic intentions when he was putting the shoes together. He was thinking about Shem Shemayim. What exactly was he doing? And Rav Dessler says the intention that Chanoch had was not as lofty as we think. Even though the ironic thing is, we might not think it's so lofty, but it really is lofty. And what do I mean? What Chanoch was doing was Chanoch was with every single bang of the nail was saying, I'm doing this to help people. I'm doing this to make sure that people are protected and people have good shoes. And we see over here, this is the idea. What Chanoch was doing was showing that every single action that he's involved in is there to help somebody. And that is what we call Mekad Hashem Shemayim with everything that you do. I don't know if Rabbi Chiya's intentions were of a pure, highly thing. They could have very well been. But it's very possible that we can have the same idea that what Rabbi Chiya was doing was what Rav Dessler said that Chanoch was doing, and that was simply every single idea that he was doing was to show that Torah is important. And when you go ahead and you do something, and you put in the work to make things by hand, you show that things are important. And what everybody realized was, seeing the effort that Rabbi Chiya did, he was showing anybody, or we have Torah education is the utmost important thing, and there's no action, there's no concept, there's no task when it comes to making sure that people learn Torah that is considered to be unimportant, to the point where even the person who spins the nets or growing the flax, that's also part of Limud HaTorah. Because anybody who can dedicate anything to Limud HaTorah and Talmud Torah is doing something to the level of Rabbi Chiya. And that's something we can learn from. Because again, this intention, well, you know, it might not seem so lofty. Just to show that this is important, really, in fact, is a very lofty one. And just think about it, ironically, not ironically, the Gemara says that Rabbi Chiya used a tzvi, or a deer, to go ahead and make for the cloth. And you can write the Torah on any kosher animal skin. It's true, probably in the New York, New Jersey metro area, we don't have too many deer. But my guess is most Sefer Torah are not written on the skin of a deer. And in fact, I saw an article about this Gemara, where the person who wrote the article, unfortunately I forget his name, but the one who wrote the article was mentioning that it was very rare. And you quoted different sources showing that it was rare to write a Torah on deer skin. What's so special about deer skin? So we know that Eretz Yisrael is called Eretz Tzvi. And Chazal tell us that the reason why it's called Eretz Tzvi is that the deer skin is very, very unique. When you cut the skin off a deer, it shrinks. But what happens is when the skin is on a deer, it expands and it stretches all over the place. And we say that Eretz Yisrael is called Eretz Tzvi. Homiletically, it's brought down by the Navi, because it shows that the influence of Eretz Yisrael spreads throughout the world. I'd like to suggest that perhaps this is what Rabbi Chiya was teaching us also. Teaching Torah is such an important thing. It doesn't only affect the people who you teach, but it affects everybody who comes into account with them. And just to conclude, the famous story they tell about Rav Shlomo Hyman Zichrono Levracha, the great Rosh Yeshiva of Torah Vadas, who one day it was a giant blizzard, and he came and made his way through yeshiva. And he was giving a shiur with the same intensity as he had there. And he was sweating and really, really getting into what he was doing. And they looked into the room and they saw there was one person sitting there. And I said, Rebbe, I understand, you know, you want to give shiur, but there's one person. What are you getting so worked up for? And Shlomo Hyman said, one person? There's not one person sitting in here. There's generations, because this person's going to have children, and who's going to have grandchildren and great-grandchildren. This person's going to have associates. This person's going to have friends. Everybody, the influence that we have in our classrooms, the influence that we have when we learn Torah and do mitzvot and support Torah, expands beyond the people sitting there, but it goes throughout the generations. This is the idea we learn about Rabbi Chiya, and hopefully we can emulate his principles and do our best to show what it takes that one of the most important thing that we have, or the most important thing that we have for Jewish survival, is Limud HaTorah. And it's something we can, Bezer Hashem, continue to disseminate and propagate throughout the generations. Kol Tov, have a wonderful week.